So if anyone would like to raise anything or to have any questions or things they want to hear more about, please. Yeah, at the back there.
Well, in Thailand, they control the ordinations. Like, even though you know, according to Vinaya, you can ordain if you have 10 years. But because there's so many monks in Thailand, they couldn't possibly allow that to take place. So they select certain monks in certain areas who cover an area of the. So eventually he was made an upachaya, or one who could ordain monks within his own area, but also from his branch monasteries, which were everywhere, but even worldwide. But he was also given a royal title by the king. So these royal titles are usually fought after, you know, really very important, but Lumpur didn't give it much importance, but it was given with him not seeking it at all. So, I mean, he really received enormous kind of acclaim in his life, and given all the, and also I find that in my own life with him, and now in living in England for so many years, I felt this tremendous support of the Thai Sangha also coming to me. It's like I'm, just from the power of Lungpo Cha, the kind of support and cooperation I've had from every level of the Thai Sangha in Thailand, that I'm very grateful for, and I wasn't expecting. So when it's due to the power of this little man.
There was a succession of different causes. He'd been a wandering monk for about, he set off when he was about 7 reins wandering, and then he first decided to settle and take on responsibilities of teaching when he was about 11 or 12 years later. He was about 18 or 19 reigns. A lot to do with the fact that he was a very charismatic person and had a lot of insight in his practice, and people kept wanting to come and practice with him. And he kept pushing people away and saying, you know, he wanted to be alone and be independent. But finally, just a combination of his own, you know, the fact he was drawing a lot of people and his own compassionate nature just decided him to take on some disciples and to teach for a while. It actually was the first reigns that he spent as a teacher of a group of students wasn't at his home monastery, at Wat Bapong. But it was at a place some distance away, and just as a little aside, the routine, also being a disciple of his, even in the early days when he was known as being tougher than ever, was the discipline for the first rains retreat was they had an all-night meditation every night, and then the last month, just to turn up the heat a little bit more. Every night they sat for the whole night without moving. Every night for a month. So he probably realized that not many people were going to be able to stay with that program. But at the end of that rains retreat, word had spread to his home village, and a little delegation, including his mother, came to the place where he'd been staying with his other small group of monks and novices, and said, "Well, if you're thinking of starting up a monastery, please may we invite you to come. There's a forest near to Bangor, his home village. We would like to invite you to stay there and establish a monastery there instead of here, which was a few miles distant." And from the accounts that have come down, he was kind of waiting for the invite. So when it came, then he was very pleased to take that up and then to set up in the forest, just a mile or two outside of his home village. Yeah, one down here.
I mean, ordained, or well, in Thailand, it's they have the. I think it's a really beautiful custom of when you can ordain at any time. You know, from childhood, or you know, you can become a novice monk when you're a child. After 20, then you can take full ordination, and some men ordain even late in life, and. So many of them were, you know, like just old people who, old monks were the, like ordained when they were 50, 60, even 70. There's no limit on the age after 20. But they have to be, you know, they can't be like something that needs to be a burden on the Sangha. So you have to have enough faculties and things to be able to do all necessary monastic procedures, but a lot of these are, you know, men whose wives had died, or and who, you know, just want to devote the rest of their life to meditation. So there are quite a few, and a lot of Lungpa Cha's old friends from childhood became monks late in life, and the same with nuns. The nuns also order was sometimes in it. In a very, because it's a very conservative part of Thailand, in northeast Thailand, very, you know, very conservative in its world outlook. So one of the ways women could get out of a bad marriage, or that wasn't, you know, through disgrace in their families, was to become a nun. But Ajahn Chah is also very trying to, you know, increasing the sense of meditation, of practice, not just to use the Sangha as, you know, for old age or just as an escape, but really was very careful to try who he would accept so that they weren't doing it just for the wrong reasons, because his real interest was to guide them toward enlightenment and providing those kind of conditions. And there were so many other monasteries in Thailand that would take the others, so it's not like the only one, but there was no, age was not a problem. In the West now, you get all this, because we like to organize to an incredibly high degree. We complicate the whole thing. I can see in England now, how old should we accept somebody? And these kind of questions come up, you know, in our minds, because we're control freaks, through and through.
So one of the monks who was here earlier today and was here yesterday was a he looks like quite an elder. He looks like quite an elder. He's actually only been ordained for a year or two, and he was an MD working in Dallas until last year, and he quit his medical practice and took robes and has spent much of last year actually on a property neighboring ours, and his wife, who is actually also here over this weekend, is a very keen supporter of him. So it's not like a kind of, oh dear, the marriage broke up. It's like one of the ways that a marriage can really take off. See, I'm not kidding. It's not considered like, oh dear, what a shame. You know, how sad. It's like, oh, how wonderful. You know, that these beings can continue to evolve. They just don't have to stay in a kind of home relationship in that way. So she is a devoted supporter and helper of her husband in his monastic life. Also, another thing that came to mind was that one of the sweet old monks that I met, who was that when someone ordains late in life, they're known as a lungta, an older monk. And one of the very kindly old lungtas who was around when I was first ordained was called Por Sui. And he's a sweet, gentle character, wouldn't hurt a fly. And I found out later that he'd actually been a hitman, hired to kill Ajahn Chah, and that he had been kind of lining up his attack and kind of coming around and watching Ajahn Chah's movements and seeing how he operated and kind of seeing how the day went. And so he got a bit too close to the Dharma. He got within earshot too often. And Ajahn Chah kind of reeled him into his net. And he ended up ordaining and not fulfilling his contract. So we're running a little bit over time. So maybe we'll have a break now for half an hour to stretch. Also, in the spirit of impermanence, these trees, which were very generously loaned to us by a nursery nearby, will have to return to their place, and so that those who actually were helping to carry them and move them around, if they could also lend a hand, because they'll need to go back before the end of the afternoon. So we're aiming to send the forest back where it came from, Jack. Also, if you've been wondering what these little notices are doing hanging in the trees, that was very much a style of Ajahn Chah's monasteries, many little signs hanging in the trees, as Jack mentioned, saying, hey, you, wake up! And such like things, so that the little notices we created were to evoke a little bit of a sense of Ajahn Chah's monasteries. Okay, so we'll reassemble in 25 minutes at 1:45.